Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Peach State Prospects, what is hopefully becoming your go-to podcast for all things Braves minor league baseball. I am your host, Gaurav Vedak, and I am joined today by none other than Garrett Spain, aka at Braves MILB on Twitter, or I guess X. Joe is sitting this episode out as he's focusing on some deadlines for work and school. Now, together, the two of us today will walk you through the significant transactions that have occurred in the Braves minor league system over the last 10 to 12 days and give you the thoughts on the debut of Spencer Schwellenbach. So sit back, relax, and get ready for another episode of Peach State Prospects. Garrett, how are you doing today on this frankly horribly humid Atlanta day?
It seems like every single game that we're keeping up with right now is delayed. So I guess we have a little bit of time to record. I'm doing very well. It's kind of been interesting. I'm kind of excited that we kind of have some actual movement in the system. It seems like everybody's been stuck on the same team for so long that now it's kind of nice to see the guys that have done well get opportunities, and we'll get a chance to talk to it today. I know it was a little bit rough coming back for you. How are you doing now?
I am so happy to be back. It was a magical vacation over in Peru. I'm not gonna lie. Going through Machu Picchu, I think I hit up, five different cities in 10 days. Did get some food poisoning on my final day, and like you said, it was a pretty horrible plane ride back. But on the mend and recovering, and again, just really happy to be back and watching baseball yesterday or this weekend. I watched like five different baseball games happen. It was amazing just getting caught back up into what's going on and not just the sporting world, but everything else. And again, just really happy to be back. Now that we've kind of gone through these pleasantries and gotten that all out of the way, let's go ahead and get down to business. Again, today's episode is mainly focused on all these transactions that have happened. You had the DSL season start. Well, not really start. They've postponed the first game, had a doubleheader the next game. Those two games have been postponed. We'll see what happens tomorrow. They open the season during the rain season down in the Dominican. I'm not exactly sure why, but that's not for us to discuss. As a result, we've seen a flurry of different transactions occur throughout the organization, both in the majors all the way down to, again, the DSL. So we're going to kind of start in chronological order. And that first and foremost dates back to May 28th, where Peach State Prospects number 20 prospect Blake Burkhalter made his first rehab appearance and now subsequently has made his second. Now, a little about Blake. He was drafted in 2023 with the compensation pick that the Braves received following the departure of Freddie Freeman. Blake, again, has pitched in two games. He's got a three-pitch mix. He features a mid to high four-seam fastball. He's got a good changeup. He used to have a slider, but he had no idea how to really throw it. He got rid of that, added a cutter, and he really had a fantastic college, final college year over at Auburn. The Braves drafted him early in the second round again with that comp pick. He came back, he sat out 2023 with Tommy John surgery. He came back again just last week. His first appearance, not that great. 0.1 innings, gave up a pair of hits, three earned runs, two walks, and a strikeout. Just yesterday, again, this is June 4th that we're recording, so June 3rd. He had a second appearance where he was frankly pretty dominating. Two innings pitched, one hit, zero runs, zero walks, and five strikeouts. He looked great. He was dominating. But again, this is someone with college experience, and that's exactly what someone with that experience should do in the FCL. We're not going to know much about him until he's back in full season ball, but it is encouraging to see him at least come out guns a-blazing with that kind of line. Garrett, any initial thoughts on the return of Blake?
Burkhalter is interesting for me because I know the plan when he was drafted was they wanted to convert him to a starter, start him long term. Now that he's had that Tommy John surgery, the question is going to be whether that's still the plan. He is a bit of an undersized guy. He's really, he has three pitches, but it's really more fastball cutter for him. That tends to be like the two pitches he goes to. So I do wonder if they're going to go ahead and convert him to a reliever or do what they've done with a lot of guys and say, we're going to just start you just to get you the innings and then eventually convert to reliever. I think that's really the big thing to watch is do they stretch him out to where he's going three, four, five innings, or do they keep him at, two or three innings where he's really showing that he's a reliever? I think that's really the question I have for him, and I think that'll determine a lot of his stock. If they still believe in him as a starter, that's obviously more value. And if they think that he's a reliever, I think with the return from injury, it won't be this year, but he's a guy that could get up to Atlanta next year pretty early if they just go ahead and put him in relief.
Blake is a lot like Jean-Carlos Lara to me, where I like what you're talking about, potentially maybe having him start off with throwing multiple innings in that starting role. However, that's mainly just to get added work on each game. I do see him more, like you said, he's a bit undersized. I do see him more as a pure reliever, and the Braves could see in that relief role, could see him really expedite it and compete for a relief role. Like you said, early next year, I think he's got that dynamic three, but really, two pitch mix, fastball cutter, and that's two pitches that are both MLB ready. I would go ahead and put that on there. They're both MLB quality pitches. So he's got an interesting command. He would be a very, very fast riser. We're gonna figure that out pretty quickly this year to see, how long he stays in the FCL as he's. Does he like quickly move up to Mississippi, then Gwinnett, or are they going to take time? If he's going to work in as a starter, you'll see him most likely start down in Augusta, get those innings in his arm, and eventually shut him down pretty early because he did miss all of 2023. So interesting case for him. I'm in the same boat as you, as I do believe he's more of a pure reliever, and with that role, we could see him in Atlanta as early as next year. Moving on from that, we got Diego Benitez, who has moved to the FCL. It's not a rehab assignment. You don't see that too often. The reasoning behind this move is because they've shifted him from shortstop to third base. Not a huge surprise. He did commit 18 errors, mostly throwing errors over at short this year. He's got a 445 OPS. It has not been a good year. Garrett, what do you think of this move to third? Again, he's got a ton of throwing errors. Do you see him being able to move to third base, or eventually do you see Diego moving to more of a first base left field role?
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe think he could be a second baseman. I think the issue with Benitez is already there are questions about the bat. Now, I think that he has power. We've seen a couple of times this year where he's crushed baseballs and he can make contact with fastballs in the zone. He struggled with his approach and he struggled with any secondary pitches, which a lot of young guys do. And I don't think that his bat is good enough for him to move to left field, move to first base, and project well there. At second base, maybe eventually he hits enough to get to be a, average major leaguer at that position. But I just don't think what we've seen from him defensively is he just makes so many mistakes. He rushes himself. There's really no way to look at him and project him to stick on the dirt or even stick up the middle. And so if you're not playing, he doesn't have the speed to play center field. So he's not playing a premium position. He's not really a premium hitter. It's hard to project that guy to a major league role long term. He wasn't going to stick at shortstop. I think that was pretty clear that he wasn't, but the hope was kind of that he would develop offensively. And I haven't seen the development from him offensively. Now, some guys, it takes longer. But right now for Benitez, it's hard to look at him and what he's done and say, yeah, that's a top, 20 prospect, something like that. I just don't know how you can project that to a major league role based on what we've seen so far.
It's been a rough year. Again, doesn't necessarily mean we don't believe in him as a prospect. It's just that we haven't exactly seen what we wanted to see from his development. Maybe this change will help ease his mind as he doesn't, it's in his head, all the errors that he's committed. A lot of it, could be mental. We'll see. something to monitor, over the next few weeks as he starts to settle in at that third base position. Now on to much better news. On the 29th, Spencer Schwellenbach was recalled to Atlanta and made his debut. Now, Spencer's line was 5 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned runs. He gave up one home run, only one walk, and struck out 5. I was in Peru for the game. Garrett, I would love to hear what you have to say about how Spencer did in his major league debut.
So one thing that I want to really, when you look at that final line, 5 innings pitched, 3 runs, it definitely doesn't look good. One of the things that is important to realize about that is I think everybody kind of felt like he was left in the game too long. You looked at that last inning, his command was starting to struggle. He was going through the lineup a third time, especially in his major league debut, and that wasn't a position where he was going to be able to succeed. He ended up giving up that home run late. And overall, I don't want to say he was better than the line, but he was better earlier than what the final line ended up being simply because he was left in too long. Now, some of that is they haven't stretched him out a ton in the minor leagues, right? The most he's thrown this year is 87 pitches, and he went over that in his major league debut. That's very tough for a guy in that environment because your adrenaline runs early, and then all of a sudden by the third inning, you've exerted yourself a little bit more. A lot of pitchers, they exert themselves more than they typically would when that adrenaline goes through, and then it wears off, and all of a sudden they're tired early. I definitely saw a lot of fatigue with him, and I think that that's obviously the concern that we've really had with him. But I do think that his stuff looked good, and he looked like he had major league quality stuff. The biggest inconsistency that he had in that first game was his curveball. It was a little more horizontal than it normally is, and a lot of that has to do with his arm angle. He was struggling to find his release point. His arm angle was a little bit low, his release point was low, it was further away from his body, so he was throwing at a lower arm angle. And obviously, it was from the data that we've seen that we can't really share, it was more prevalent on that curveball than it was on any other pitch. Part of that could be grip issues. Some guys, they come from the major leagues, they're not as used to the ball there, and so they have to kind of fiddle with the grip a little bit. Some of it could be mental, and it's just a matter of the curveball didn't look as good as we've seen it in the minor leagues because the angle of it, because his arm angle wasn't proper, and really on all of his pitches, there was an issue with his arm angle. It's something to monitor going forward, but what we've seen from Schwellenbach in the past, I don't have much of a concern with that. And I think that his curveball is going to be back to being a good pitch. And then suddenly he's able to maybe pitch deeper into games and really go through a lineup a third time more consistently. Overall, I thought he looked good. I think that he was a player that we had discussed saying, like, this guy's closer to ready than you really think he is. And he showed that. The command was good early. The stuff was good. The slider, especially, was good. And it's just a matter of can he get the arm angle right? And of course, can he work deeper into games and deeper into the season? But I think right now he deserves to continue to get that fifth starter spot until he proves he's not good enough for it, at least until AJ Smith-Shawver comes back. And, I kind of hope that we can see him really get things right and succeed going forward.
Yeah, I really love that the Braves are giving him that another opportunity. He'll be facing the Red Sox tomorrow on June 5th. So it's overall good stuff to hear about Schwellenbach. Looking forward to again his next game and seeing that consistency and that release point. Now on to we had that good news. Now on to the next wave of bad news. The Braves lose Owen Murphy to what has been reported to Tommy John surgery on the season. Owen was unbelievable. He started 7 games, had a 1.54 ERA, a 0.732 whip. He was striking out 13 per nine. He was walking just 2.6 per nine. He was throwing all of his pitches for strikes. His sequencing was fantastic. To have someone that good pitch that well, and now to lose him for the year and probably a good portion of next, absolutely devastating. Garrett, anything positive you can take from this, or any kind of final thoughts on Owen's season and what you hope to potentially see from him next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we kind of there's the trope that, hard throwing guys get injured more often, which is somewhat true, but I think it's really a reminder that every single pitching prospect is a significant risk injury wise. If you would read your mentions, it would be, Owen Murphy should be the poster child of a guy that's going to stay healthy. Well, he didn't. He was a stupid sport guy. He wasn't playing baseball year round, and it still didn't matter. I think that's the biggest thing is like you look at pitching prospects, and there's just no way of knowing who it's going to happen to next. Murphy was very good this year. He's still very young. It's not something, fortunately, we're in a time where Tommy John surgery isn't something that's a significant long-term concern. You feel confident that he's going to get back. Now, he's going to lose a lot of development time. He may end up getting a little bit more rush when he comes back, but Murphy is a guy that looked very good, and this will just delay him, I think, more than anything. I don't know that it changes too much of the long-term outlook for him, rather than it's just a delay, and it just happens, unfortunately. And it really sucks to see a guy that's doing so well, that really felt like he had turned the corner. He was really rising through the system, was maybe going to be the next guy to get double A, and now all of a sudden he's shut down for probably most, if not all, of next year. And you just don't, we're just not going to get to see him. And if you look back at that draft now, I mean, almost that entire 2022 draft has been hurt. The entire top of it has. Really, only the hitters have not been hurt. The hitters and Ian Mejia are the only ones that haven't been hurt from that draft. So it's been kind of, it's a rough draft, and I think that's kind of the risk, especially with younger pitchers, is there's a lot of injury risk trying to get them through a system.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually went there because I was going to say of note, you had Cole Phillips, then you get hit by J.R. Richey, and now Owen Murphy. That's three high school prep arms that the Braves drafted that have now lost years to Tommy John surgery. And while I don't think it's going to necessarily change their draft philosophy, it is that risk, like Garrett talked about, picking that prep arm and having them slowly work their way through that system. So from Murphy, we fast forward to June 1st, and this is kind of a surprise, very interesting kind of transaction that we've seen. David Fletcher was signed by the Braves to be their utility fielder for this year. He didn't make the team. Well, he did make the team, the big league team. He had some time in Atlanta when Ozzie got hurt. Ozzie came back. He was optioned back to Gwinnett. Now we've seen him transition to a starting pitcher. He had a couple of outings for the Stripers out of the bullpen. He had some success with his knuckleball. Then they threw him at a starting pitcher one time. And now his last outing was 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. You put together a line like that, you're going to open some eyes. Following that pitching performance, he was sent down to Mississippi. Not necessarily a bad thing. Again, the Braves have a lot of arms in Gwinnett. He was sent down to Mississippi, where he is now a main part of their starting rotation. Garrett, have you kind of seen anything like this? And do you have any additional thoughts about something that's kind of wacky?
This is definitely the most fun story of the year. I'm not sitting here holding my breath that he's going to be pitching in Atlanta, but it is kind of funny just to watch it. And he's pitching like right now with Mississippi. So I don't really know if, I was kind of surprised seeing him go down to double A. I'm like, is it just a matter of playing time? And it's a matter of, no, the Braves actually want to give him a chance to pitch. And, that may be Fletcher too saying, well, I'm stuck in this contract, probably not going to get a major league role. Can you at least let me pitch? And so it's kind of funny. I mean, it's a really good knuckleball. Like, that thing's coming in like sub one. Like, it's actually a really good knuckleball. So it's really funny. I don't know. It's probably not going to work, but it's at least fun to see. And hopefully, we'll get a chance to. Hopefully, he'll actually do fun stuff with Mississippi and have some success. I'd like to see him have success. That'd be pretty cool.
I gotta be honest, I've had a few people ask me, do I see him in Atlanta? And to be frank, if we're seeing a utility fielder that turned into a starting pitcher this year in Atlanta, something has gone horrible in the organization. It's not something I want to particularly see in Atlanta, but I mean, if it prolongs his playing career and he's able to pick up something next year, that's kind of an amazing story. And I'm going to be paying attention to it as he continues as the rest of his career. As a part of that transaction that sent David Fletcher over down to Mississippi, we saw Hurston Waldrop sent back up to Gwinnett. Now I will remind everyone, Hurston had a start in Gwinnett last year, but then he started the season this year in Mississippi. So this is not his debut in Gwinnett. However, I would I think it's fair to say this is like his first real prolonged, what's going to be a prolonged opportunity in Gwinnett. His start in Gwinnett was absolutely fantastic. Six innings, five hits, three earned runs. Now I'll say a couple of those in the first inning. He started off with a rocket double against him, and then he gave up what was a pretty cheap two-run home run that just cleared the fence. But most importantly, one walk, 11 strikeouts, and a pretty memorable 22 whiffs. That splitter was in full effect, generating 16 whiffs. His fastball, well, let's hear it from you, Garrett. What did you think of Hurston Waldrop's Gwinnett start?
Yeah, I mean, going back to that start last year, because of the way the levels are staggered to end their year, we saw like a guy with like Drake Bob when he got moved up to Mississippi, then he got moved up to Gwinnett just to kind of keep getting in playing time, right? And that was what it was with Waldrop. They were like, we're going to get him one more start. And that's really what it was with Gwinnett. This year, he went back to double A, and we had talked about in those earlier starts where they're limiting his splitter. Let's focus on the fastball and slider. And it worked. Very well. His strike throwing took such an immediate step forward that over his last 18 innings in double A, he only walked four guys while still maintaining high strikeout rates. It's incredible to see how quickly his strike throwing has come, taken a step forward. He took that up to Gwinnett. And the thing is his splitter is so good that he doesn't necessarily have to command it for it to be successful. He just has to throw it near the zone and he's going to get swings and misses. He has to be finer with his fastball, and he has been finer with his fastball. Now, I'm not going to sit here and throw, he's more of a strike thrower over a command guy. He still is. He probably always will be, just the way his delivery is too. And he's always going to be a command guy. It's just about, or a control guy over command. It's just about his stuff is good enough that he just needs to get it close to the zone and really sit in and around the zone to have success rather than wildly missing consistently. We've seen that, and we saw that in his last start. And when his splitter is his best pitch or his most utilized pitch, no one can really hit it. It's one of the better pitches in the minor leagues, one of the better pitches in baseball, arguably. And it's a pitch that's going to carry him to major league success. I do think the big thing for him, I think, with that slider is he really needs to refine the consistency of the pitch. The shape isn't consistent, it tends to float vertically. And there's a lot of mislocation because he isn't releasing the ball consistently. We're gonna have to see more of that from him and whether he ends up refining it into necessarily two different pitches because he throws more of a sweeping version of the slider and more of a vertical version of the slider. So can he maybe refine that into two separate pitches that he can use consistently? I think being able to throw that slider is going to be kind of the X factor. I think his fastball split is good enough that he could pitch with those two pitches at the major league level right now, be fine. The slider's ultimately going to determine his role and whether he's, back end starter or top of the rotation type guy. The slider is fine right now. It's not great, but it does flash the potential to be great. And I would like to see more consistency from that. And if his slider is more great than okay, I don't know how you even hit him. Like the splitter, you have to be waiting on that splitter because it's so good and everything else. It's just hard to get to anything else if you're sitting on that splitter.
You don't casually get 16 whiffs on a single pitch. Are you ready to give Hurston Waldrop's splitter an 80 on the scale?
Oh yeah. I think I talked about it privately the other day. Looking at the pitches that have come through the system, I would give Spencer Strider both his fastball and his slider 80 grades. And those are the only two other pitches that I think I've seen that I would give 80s to. It's legitimately probably the best pitch that's come through the system. It's just, I've never seen a pitch that's so, it's weird too. It's good on a technical basis and it's also unique compared to other pitches. And so batters just aren't prepared to handle it. Now, that's going to be one of the steps for him is at some point, major league hitters are good enough that they're going to adjust and they're going to find out some sort of attack plan against his splitter. He's going to have to be able to show that he can adjust to that once he gets to the major league level. He may come into the major leagues and have two straight years where he's absolutely dominant because of that splitter, and hitters will eventually figure it out. Major league hitters are just too good to consistently get them out with the exact same pitch. He's going to have to figure something out once that adjustment happens. but the pitch is so good, and I think his other pitches are good enough that even once that adjustment happens, he can work with it. And we were talking to Chris, which that episode hasn't released yet. We're going to get that out soon. And one of the things that he talked about is Waldrop's a perfectionist. He's going out and he is expecting to be perfect every single time, and he's going to work to be perfect every single time. And I think that's a big thing with him, is that competitive mentality, that I am always looking to get better mentality, where when those adjustments are needed, he's not going to say, well, my splitter's been fine for 25 years. Why do I need to do it now? He's going to say, okay, I need to adjust. I'm going to do it because I want to be perfect. And that's one of the things that separates a lot of guys, is just that mentality of, I'm coming in the building every day to get better. And once Waldrop reaches that wall, I have confidence that he's the type of pitcher that's going to say, I'm going to do what it takes to get better.
I think it's safe to say, when you take someone in the first round, you really hope that they're going to make it to the major leagues. And with that splitter fastball combo, like you said, those are both major league ready pitches. So at worst, it's fair to say his floor, the role might be different, but that floor is a major league pitcher. So you're going to get someone that's going to be in Atlanta at some point, or, can't really say in Atlanta, could be, trades happen all the time, but he is a major league pitcher. So another great pick by the Atlanta Braves. We move from the first down to now what has happened today. We had a trio of transactions. Drew Compton, Jace Grady, and Luis Vargas went from the Augusta Green Jackets to the Rome Emperors. Compton was hitting 295, 406, 430, so an 835 OPS. Jace Grady had an 827 OPS. And Luis Vargas had kind of a breakout season. And I'm going to cue you. I know you have been really high on Vargas this year. But Vargas, 31.1 innings pitched, a 3.45 ERA. He's striking out 11.2 per nine and walking a hair under five, right at 4.9. What do you think of these transactions? And again, let's get some good. I want to talk about Luis Vargas with you.
Yeah, so Compton and Grady, those are older guys that really needed the push. Grady in particular, I think the biggest question is his hit tool and kind of how he's going to handle secondaries. I like his approach. I think he has enough power to be a major league player. It's just going to be, can he hit as the levels go up? And he's old enough and experienced enough where you can't tell that from single-A baseball. High is going to be a little bit more of a test. He may spend some time there, but I do want to see how he's hit to the belts. I like Grady. Compton's similar, just a guy that, the problem with Compton is he's really a first base DH type guy. That's really his flaw. I do think that he can hit. He has a good approach. So those are both older guys that we really want to see at high A, double A, kind of see what they do there before we're like, okay, this is where we get a feel for him. Okay, is he a top 30 guy? Is he not? I want to see him at high A, double A first. Vargas, on the other hand, he's been in the system for a long time, and he's always been an okay guy, right? He was 91 to 93 for however many years. I think this is season number six for him. He's 22. I think season number five, he's been in the system 6 years because he signed when he was 16. So he's a guy that has a lot of professional experience, and you kind of felt like, okay, this is who he is. He's 91 to 93, a major league quality slider, but that's about it. The command isn't great. The athleticism isn't great. He got moved to the bullpen last year. And, his fastball ticked up. And this year, the other two starts ago, he struck out 12 guys over five innings, and he was sitting 96 to 98 up through four of those innings. His fastball velocity dropped off at the end, but 96 to 98 with a 50, maybe solid 50 slider, that's an easy major league arm. Like, that's a guy that can get to the major leagues. That was not a guy we had really seen in past years from him. Now he is 22. He's had 5 years of pro experience. He should be succeeding in low A. Really, he should be succeeding in high A. And he's a guy that I still see as a reliever long term. I don't think the command is good enough. There's really no third pitch to speak of. So that is a guy that's a reliever long term, probably starting solely to get him more innings, maybe to get a little bit more fastball command out of him. But if he's sitting 96 to 98 now as a relief arm with a solid average curve slider, I mean, that's a major league quality relief arm. I do, again, the command does have to improve, but he went from, organizational depth to, okay, he's not a top 30 guy, but you got to watch him pitch because he's good enough to get to the major leagues at some point in his career.
It's just a fascinating story. Like you said, signed when he was 16. You never know when these guys are going to develop. And age 22, he's taken a massive step forward and has become someone that you can actually see in a major league on a major league level, which is kind of incredible to say.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's really, we talk about projectability with guys, and it's really rare to see guys add this much velocity that quickly, right? Like you typically, you may see a couple of miles per hour a year, but for a guy to come out and just be like, okay, well, I throw 96, 98 now, have fun with that. I don't know that I've actually seen a guy do that before. It's pretty wild.
I've just been holding back on you guys. Let me actually start trying now that I'm 22 years old. The Luis Vargas story. Now we have a couple of transactions that aren't actually transactions quite yet. Just things to really be cognizant of and take, kind of monitor. Nacho Alvarez hasn't played since the second game of that doubleheader back on May 30th. We're not exactly sure what's going on. But he hasn't played. And as of today, June 4th, again, he's not in the lineup today. So it's quite a few games off for Nacho. Ambioris Tavares, who seems to really be turning things around. He was cutting down that K rate. And I'm gonna go to you here in a second, Garrett. He started really turning things around. That final game, he had a sac fly. He had a hit by pitch, a home run, and a sac fly. And we later find out that he has a small fracture in his hand, and he's out for an extended period. Again, he really looked like someone. He's got that elite defense, really good raw power. He looked like someone that was starting to turn that corner and look like, a potential major leaguer. Again, with that defensive, with that really high defensive floor and what he's capable of with that bat. Any kind of thoughts on Nacho and Ambioris now potentially sitting for extended periods?
Yeah, Nacho's interesting. He's kind of missed time throughout the year, like a couple of games here and there, but he'll miss time, and he kind of always comes back. So you kind of have to wonder at that point, does he just have a lingering thing that keeps flaring up on him? As long as he doesn't hit the IL, it's probably just a minor thing, and he'll be back. Typically at the double A level or higher, at the lower levels, guys might just disappear for 2 months. Typically at double A and higher, because those roster spots are so valuable, they'll tend to actually put them on the injured list if they're injured. So I don't think that it's significant enough to be a long-term thing. If he isn't already on the injured list, they probably would have put him on today if they really thought it was. Tavares, I mean, this was just by far the best we've seen him play. And he's a guy that
No,
we've
man.
wanted that from for so long. We've seen the flashes of the power, and we've seen a guy who's a phenomenal defender. I mean, at shortstop, he's one of the better defenders that have come to the system in the past few years. And it felt like for once, I know they were working hard with him. We mentioned it earlier in the year that he was seeing the most pitches per plate appearances of any Braves minor leaguer. His patience, he improved his plate discipline. They were making active steps of this is what you need to do better. And he was doing those things. He was changing his swing. He was doing everything he could to get better. And it felt like he might have turned that corner. I don't think that he was going to sustain a sub 20% strikeout rate. I'm not going to say that for a guy, but he was a guy that we had talked about, privately, that if he strikes out 30% of the time with his raw power, with his defense, that's a major league starter. He's that good of a defender. He has that much power that all he really has to do is get to 30%. And you look at that guy and say, I can see that guy in a major league role. And he had worked. He clearly worked hard. And I had questioned him somewhat last year because it seemed like there were times where he quit on games. And there seemed like the Braves felt the same way about him. You're not seeing that from him this year. He's engaged with every single play. He is making good swing decisions. He's hitting the ball hard. He did everything he was supposed to. And to have him be injured now sucks because you also know thoracic outlet syndrome. He lost really 2 years almost of development time with that and COVID and all that. He lost a ton of development time to that injury. And to now get enough years away from that where he's really starting to hit a stride and to then have another not significant injury, but an injury that impacts that momentum, it really sucks. And it's kind of, I mean, you look at if it's 2 months at this point, that's almost the end of the season. But that's the, August and now all of a sudden, maybe a breakout year turns into, well, let's hope he can do it next year. And it's disappointing. The good thing with him is he is young, He's clearly talented, and I'm impressed just to see him make that progress, and he's put in the work, no doubt. I mean, the amount of improvement that he's seen, you don't just accidentally cut your strikeout rate in half. That doesn't happen. There aren't just, you had a lucky stretch where your strikeout rate was half. He made efforts to improve. Now, how much of that improvement was real versus just a streak, we just won't know now, probably. But he clearly made improvements. He was a better baseball player, and he had made a lot of strides. And it really, I hate to see a guy who's done that much work get to where it felt like he finally had it click, and then to get shut down. It's one of the more disappointing things that we've seen.
Just to add on to that, I spoke with someone that's close to Tavares, and it was, I just wanted to understand his mental state because, like you said, he was entering this period of, kind of prolonged stretch of play where he was showing us why the Braves gave him that signing bonus. He was playing extremely well. You saw the adjustments he's made. It's clear that this year, and I asked this question. How is he mentally? Like, where is he? And the response was the first thing Tavares said upon hearing that he's going to be sitting out, this extended period was everything happens for a reason. And what I get from that personally is that that's someone that's locked in. That's someone that understands just how much hard work goes into becoming a major league player. And he's put in that effort this year and to have it, kind of taken away from him. And I'm not going to say it's from that exact hit by pitch, but most likely when he got hit in that game, it caused that break. And ultimately, again, going back to that power, he went on to again hit a sacrifice fly that scored a run and hit a home run, what ended up being a fracture in his hand. Like, remarkable strength in him. To have that taken away, it really sucks. And again, like you said, the thoracic outlet syndrome took away time from him as well. I'm just really hopeful that next year, well, he comes back this year, but I'm really hopeful next year he puts it all together and we see the Tavares that the Braves saw when they gave him that signing bonus. Someone that is that premium defensive shortstop that's going to play shortstop for the rest of his career. Like you said, have premium pop at that position. The hit tool, we'll see, but as long as he keeps that strikeout rate below 30. That's a major league quality player playing outstanding defense and someone that provides a ton of value to a major league team. My heart breaks for him. Thrilled to hear at least that everything is starting to make sense for him, that he is putting in that time. He's being the consummate professional, the consummate teammate, someone that's becoming really, really easy to root for and you want to see succeed. Now, changing gears a little bit, we talked about these transactions that have occurred. We're entering the summer where we start to see things just fly. You got, again, the Dominican Summer League starting up. You see promotions, you see demotions, you see players getting hurt. Garrett, I want to kind of ask you, what are some transactions that you can see happening in the near future?
Yeah, I think the first thing is Mississippi needs a little bit of help with that rotation. And there are definitely a couple of older guys at Rome that have a chance to go up. I think Drew Hackenberg and Lucas Braun are the two that you look at. I haven't seen enough to feel confident in Hackenberg yet, though it does seem like the Braves like him. But Braun is a guy that four pitches, commands them all very well. That's a guy that you kind of talk about and you say, well, nothing is spectacular, but man, he just does everything so well. And he seems like a guy that Braves could get to double A this year, and potentially you don't want to get too aggressive with guys, but you've seen it with guys like Bryce Elder and Dylan Dodd in the past, those kind of lower draft picks that they're advanced college arms that kind of do a lot of things pretty well, that suddenly they go into spring training and they have a chance to make the roster. I think that Braun could legitimately be one of those guys. He's advanced enough that he could legitimately be one of those guys that going into next year you look at and say, does he make the roster? Probably not. Does he get enough looks in spring training where the Braves feel like, look, if we need a guy in June, that's the guy we can go get? I think that Braun is that type of player, and I think he'll probably get a double A chance soon. The numbers aren't great for him right now, but he's been better than those numbers, and especially of late, he's been better. Consistent strikeout guy, consistent command guy, a guy that's just a really solid arm and a really good find for a sixth round pick. And then going down a level, the guy I would have replace him is Adam Meyer. That's pretty obvious. He's really been dominant. The only time that he struggles is because that Augusta defense is god awful, and he gives up a lot of ground balls. Like, the defense is bad, he gives up a lot of ground balls, so things get through that really shouldn't get through. But Meyer is very good, and he's a guy that's kind of impressed coming off of 2 years missed due to a brace procedure in his elbow. He's a guy that should get a chance in high A soon, kind of similar to Schwellenbach last year, where give him a couple months. Let him work the rest off. If he's healthy going into the end of May, into June, go ahead, pull him up, see what he can do. I think he's kind of at that point right now where he's getting very close to being ready to come up. I'm a little surprised with all the moves that were made that he actually wasn't pulled up. But it seems like he's not quite going to get that call yet, but I could see it very soon. And then a guy that we've talked about a lot is Jeremy Reyes. Super lively arm. Really, the FCL team has two good players. That's Reyes and Aristigueta. Luis Aristigueta. Those are really the only two players. I feel like one of those two is probably good enough to come up to the to Augusta this year. Now, you have to keep in mind they're both 18, so there's still quite a lot of development time left for them, but they seem like they're good enough that the FCL isn't really a challenge for them. And game in, game out, they're being nearly dominant. I think Reyes probably, between the two, I would probably say Reyes would be first, but either would be a good pick.
Now, of course, when Garrett's talking about the FCL roster only having two good players, he's referring to the pitching staff. On the offense, you got John Gill, Mario Baez, Douglas Glaude, and then one of the biggest events that happened today was the reactivation of Luis Guanipa. He started in center field today, went 2 for 3, didn't seem to miss a beat. High bonus guy that the Braves signed. Very, very good, encouraging to see him. I'm very interested to see how much run of play he gets here, how long is in the FCL. He's very advanced for his age offensively, most likely going to stay the year in the FCL. But again, there is a lot of very intriguing offensive players, especially international players down in the FCL this year. Garrett, any closing thoughts from you?
No, I mean it's just, I kind of want to talk, go back to Tavares, and it's just like I said, I had mentioned earlier, kind of feeling like maybe he gave up on games. You got to remember with a lot of these guys, think about yourself when you were 19 years old.
Yeah, that's very
I was
important.
not a very good person, right? So, you feel a little bit of saying like, okay, I understand what it was like to be that age, to be away from your family, and to say like he had some bad games and he gave up. It's not the end of the world, and you're seeing the character from him of he put that behind him and he's a different player this year. And so Tavares is a guy that, I want to say like seeing that maturity from him is something that's also impressive. And what you were talking about, kind of taking it in stride, I want to see him back soon. And he's a guy that I was wondering if he was going to be a top 30 guy, but I think what he's done in the last couple of weeks and just the progression he's made is enough to say like, yeah, that's a legitimate prospect, and it's too early to give up on him.
I have to say, I love that you went there, and it's extremely, extremely important to call out. There are 18-year-olds that are leaving their family and moving to a different country, especially when I'm specifically talking to these international prospects. So, to really expect them to have everything solved, to have everything in their life figured out, to have, to begin their professional career out the gates 100% is unfathomable. And frankly, it's too much expectation from all of us. To expect these, yeah, technically adults, but they're 18. Like at 18, I was getting ready to go to college. I was getting ready. I was like, oh, I'm leaving my parents. I'm gonna go, kind of understand who I am as a person, not start my career, not start, not try and like become this person that can feed my, that can feed everybody back home, that can turn around lives, right? You go to John Carlos Lara, who was signed for $10,000, and he's sent over to the US at a young age. And I know for a fact he doesn't come from a very wealthy family. And there are high expectations placed on him as a child. And so for us to expect them to come out with everything solved, for us to expect for them to just show out every single game and think that they figured out life is frankly irresponsible from us. And you want to, and it's expected that they're going to have to take time to figure things out. Again, I'm mainly talking about these international prospects. Now, I'm not discrediting the prep players here. They're also taking big gambles. But when you're moving to a different country, when you're learning a different language, when you're learning a different culture all at the same time, while also trying to prove yourself as a person and prove that you're worthy of that spot on a roster, that you're worthy of being on a major league roster, like that's so much on your mind every single game, every single day. You're learning on top of that from people that have gone through this before, but you're still learning while also adapting to a different culture, while learning a new language. There is so much going on a day-to-day basis that literally no one talks about. And for us to be like, oh, like how can he take that play off? Like, no, give these guys a break. They deserve the time. They deserve us to say, hey, it's okay, man. Like, just learn from your mistakes and continue to develop. Get better. Learn from your teammates. Like, it's a sore spot for me. I've seen comments on Twitter. I don't care for it. Give them a break. Like, period. They're going through a ton every single day. And for them to show up and, someone like Tavares, who's seemingly starting to really put it together and becoming a genuine adult that understands all these different responsibilities, it really, really tugs on my heart when they then have to go through injury problems. It's just something that you don't like to see. That's absolutely devastating. And, I know I've gone on for this, and it's just really tough to see. And I wish nothing but the best, frankly, for everybody. Owen Mur I'm not going to just say Ambioris. My heart breaks for Owen Murphy, who's putting together an amazing season, and just to have that taken away from you, frankly, because who knows? Great mechanics, 91, 93, like you said, dual sport, did everything right. It's just baseball. Things happen, and it's tough. It's tough to see. They're so young. They're working on so much. It truly is heartbreaking. My heart goes out to all of them. Wish them all the best luck. Hope everything works out, and we really want to see them all succeed. Well, that's all we have for you on this episode of Peach State Prospects. Make sure to pay attention to your feeds later this week as Garrett and Joe have a killer interview with Mississippi, frankly, everything man, Chris Harris. I'm Gaurav. He's Garrett. Thanks for listening to us ramble on today, and we look forward to doing it again in just a couple of days.